from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The battle over net neutrality has gone white hot this week. Yesterday, nearly 150 internet firms, Google, Amazon, Dropbox, Reddit, and many more, came out against a new push by the Federal Communications Commission that is expected to allow carriers like Comcast and Verizon to charge for faster access to consumers. Critics, and they are many, say creating privileged so-called fast lanes of online traffic is a threat to the fundamental promise of the internet. As of yesterday, there is public dissent within the FCC. Chairman Tom Wheeler says he's pushing ahead, but there's a storm out there. This hour on Point, net neutrality, the FCC, and the future of the internet. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you in this fray? Watching? What's at stake here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Brian Fung, technology policy reporter for The Washington Post. Brian, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Things are still popping here. It's 1 week until this is supposed to come to at least a preliminary head. And we've got these two things going on yesterday. One, this big letter from a whole lot of internet companies, and I just named a few of them, but many more, eBay and Etsy and Facebook and Foursquare and LinkedIn. Microsoft is in there, and Netflix, Tumblr, Twitter, Yahoo. They're talking about a grave threat to the internet in this letter. What's the threat, Brian?
Well, one of the things that these companies are worried about is a so-called fast lane, which you mentioned in the at the top of the show, that would allow businesses like Verizon and AT&T to charge web companies for access to subscribers like you and me. And that could be very worrisome for these large companies, but also potentially for smaller companies that don't have the funds to pay for these access tolls.
Procedurally, what's happening here? We're 1 week out from May 15th, where what is supposed to happen, according to Tom Wheeler, the FCC chair?
Well, every month the FCC has a meeting where they bring up issues of policy and they discuss them, and net neutrality happens to be on the docket this month. Now, one thing that's really interesting that happened yesterday is that one of the FCC commissioners, Jessica Rosenworcel, suggested that maybe we should hold off on dealing with the net neutrality issue until next month's meeting. And that was a really surprising step. No one was really seeing that coming. Another Democratic commissioner, Mignon Clyburn, suggested something similar, saying that, we should be very careful moving forward on net neutrality. She didn't exactly call for a delay, but when both Democratic commissioners are signaling to the Democratic chairman that, maybe this is something we ought to hold off on, that's a significant step.
Give us a sense of the scale of the firestorm that has this maybe wavering at this point.
Well, according to Commissioner Clyburn, about 100,000 comments have been filed to her office alone, about net neutrality from the public. Now, it's important to point out that the public comments will technically end when the FCC takes up the net neutrality issue in its meeting on May 15th, but that then will open up a new round of public comments. So the public can still issue feedback on the proposed plan that FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler has put forward.
All of this is happening without that plan being fully unveiled yet. So what are the how has it come to the public? What are people reading that has them up in arms? Or is how much of this is speculative?
Well, a lot of it comes from a report that was written by the Wall Street Journal several weeks ago, they obtained a leaked copy of the plans, and from that we were able to deduce basically what the FCC is planning. Now, it's also worth pointing out that the FCC chairman has been very open about his intentions to allow some level of discrimination when it comes to net neutrality. So this is not really a surprise, but the issuance of the proposed rules internally at the FCC sort of served as a catalyst for talking more broadly and more publicly about what's going to happen.
The plan would allow, I'm reading here, companies to strike paid prioritization deals as long as they acted in a commercially reasonable manner, subject to review on a case-by-case basis. Tom Wheeler's putting that caveat forward as a reason to take comfort. Why are people not comforted by that?
Well, this is sort of goes back to the problem of writing anything in a rule. You know, how do you define something like commercially reasonable? And it's up to the FCC to determine what factors will go into that that term. And you know, one of the things that the FCC says it'll consider is whether or not a paid prioritization traffic deal would be in the public interest. Another thing might be whether or not it's being done in good faith. Another might be whether or not it harms or benefits competition. And so obviously a lot of these things are very subjective, and it's hard to determine exactly where to draw the line between what's commercially reasonable and what's not. And the fear among consumer advocates is that with so many potential factors going into this decision, lawyers for broadband providers would be able to sort of wriggle their way through the regulatory gauntlet.
Remind us of Tom Wheeler's background. He was a lobbyist for the cable companies before he was FCC chair. What exactly was his role there, and where are the cable companies pushing now?
That's right. So Tom Wheeler was among the cable industry's top lobbyists. He was the head of the cable association that represents large cable companies here in Washington. And, you know, that's his background, and a lot of people are very skeptical about, you know, what his biases in coming to this debate. On the other hand, you know, given his record over the past 6 months, as his tenure as FCC chair has sort of progressed, I think it's been clear that Wheeler has been very open about not giving the cable companies special treatment. In fact, at a large cable industry conference out in LA several weeks ago, he explicitly told the cable companies that they had enjoyed relatively loose regulation in the past, and now that they are incumbents, it may be time to revisit that.
How do you analyze who's on this list, who's signed on to this letter opposing this, and who hasn't? Why do we see Amazon and Dropbox and Google and Netflix all on here, Tumblr, Twitter? Is this ideological? This is a commitment, almost a moral commitment? Is it a business case that's got them signing onto the letter against the anticipated changes?
You know, it's very interesting. To date, we haven't heard much from any of these tech companies about net neutrality. And so it's very interesting that they would choose this time, about a week left until the meeting, to weigh in on net neutrality. For instance, Google was a big supporter of the net neutrality rules that were initially written in 2010, that were then struck down in January by a federal court. And so, since that point, we haven't heard very much from Google or any of these other companies about net neutrality. And I think a lot of them have been very carefully trying to make a business decision about how their position on net neutrality could affect their relationship with, for example, Comcast or Verizon or any of these other internet service providers.
Internet service providers with a lot of power in their own right, politically and in business terms. Brian Fung, we're going to dive on in here. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us. Brian Fung is technology policy reporter for The Washington Post. Brian, thanks very much for getting us started.
My pleasure, Tom.
With us now from Charlottesville, Virginia, is Shiva Vaidyanathan. He's chair of the Department of Media Studies at the University of Virginia, author of The Googleization of Everything and Why We Should Worry. Shiva Vaidyanathan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It's very nice to be here.
Tom Wheeler says, don't worry, be happy. He's got your back. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is that what he's allowing to happen is the creation of a prime lane, a fast lane for video traffic. Now, that is going to make a positive difference in some ways, because the streaming of Netflix to your house will come over in a more dependable way, probably a stronger way. So in that sort of short-term, immediate gratification way, this move could benefit people who stream Netflix. It's, however, not so good for the general environment, the general commercial environment, the general competitive environment, the general creative environment. It's also ultimately going to cost us all more money. Basically, by creating a fast lane, Comcast, which is the major internet service provider for most Americans right now, and soon to be even bigger as it purchases Time Warner Cable and thus gets a foothold in Manhattan, among other places, Comcast has the ability now to shake down services, companies that provide a lot of digital video to us, like Netflix, like Amazon, like Google. And when they shake these companies down for the extortion price to have their video run cleanly and strongly in the fast lane, that is going to urge those companies to charge us more. That's, again, a fairly trivial problem. It's not a good thing, but it's not the worst thing. The worst thing is that that's going to shut out access to the fast lane for those companies that don't have a lot of cash on hand, that aren't established, that don't have a presence or an audience. So the next great video service might never appear to us as a strong and viable competitor to these established video services. That's a big problem.
And of course, we've got a break right here. Hold the bigger problem, if you would, Shiva Bhaktinathan. People are talking, of course, the internet has always been about the great next big thing. And the warning here is that that will be shut out on many fronts if this new set of rules goes into effect. There's a firestorm out there. We'll look at that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about the battle over net neutrality, the open internet, and the new FCC push that has a lot of the internet world up in arms. The charge is fast lane for giants and eat their dust for innovators. We'll hear in a moment from Kevin Werbach at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. With us right now from the University of Virginia, chair of the Department of Media Studies there is Shiva Vaidyanathan. And Shiva, I had to interrupt just as you were getting to your big concern about what's unfolding here.
Yeah, you know what? In the larger scheme, net neutrality and the policy details and the price of each of these services, they're not going to matter in the long run. The bigger question is, what sort of information ecosystem do we want in our democratic republic over the next 20 to 40 years? Look, for the last 20 years, we've had this wide open, chaotic, anarchistic environment, this set of media known as the internet. And through that, we've had a terrific amount of experimentation, a terrific amount of creativity, a terrific fire hose of information. And we're just now trying to figure out how to live with it. But since its beginning, there have been powerful forces trying to re-engineer it and rein it in, sometimes for good reasons, to cut down on some of the really filthy stuff or dangerous stuff coming through, sometimes for not so good reasons, to limit competition, for instance. And that's what we're seeing here with the network neutrality battle. The network neutrality battle is just one part of a larger set of policies about our information systems. Look, right now, the FCC has three different sets of policies depending on what kind of signals we're dealing with. There's a set of policies for DSL and phone service, right, which many of us still use to connect to the internet. And of course, that was the dominant way in the 20th century. Then there's a different set of rules for cable broadband. And that's what we're talking about today, mostly the new proposals for cable broadband. And then there's a different set of rules for mobile. Mobile technology, of course, doesn't have to adhere by old network neutrality rules, which have been so important to the growth and success of the internet. So instead of having the FCC step back and say, let's think about what people do with this information, how we need to enable people to connect with their governments, with their schools, with their libraries and universities, with their commercial services, how people communicate with each other, and let's design policies across the board, regardless of what kind of device you're using or how the signal is getting to you. Instead of doing it comprehensively, the FCC keeps dividing up these areas of or these methods of delivery and coming up with distinct narrow policies. That just invites the lobbyists in to take advantage of each of those differences. The FCC could reclassify cable broadband to follow the same rules that the telephone networks have followed for decades and that DSL has to follow. Instead of doing that, which would take courage but would clearly be in the public interest, Chairman Wheeler is cowering to the pressure of Comcast. Now, within this, this is the interesting thing. I think we can look at the last 20 years and say, okay, the wild times are over. The big powerful interests seem to be ascendant right now. And if you look at a bunch of stuff that's happened just in the past year, what we see now is pretty much the end of neutrality in a classic sense. We also saw just about a month ago a huge breakdown in faith in internet security because the OpenSSL system had some pretty big flaws in it, and a lot of important websites had been clearly insecure for more than 2 years.
You're talking about Heartbleed and all of that uproar.
Exactly. That should make us all wonder whether the systems we're using are really trustworthy. All right. And then this is all coming in the wake of these horrifying revelations about the NSA and the ways that the NSA has been cracking security in all of these technology companies and spying on Americans in what I think are clearly illegal ways, and definitely in ways that we have not been clearly up to date on or informed about. And you have to step back and say, you know, I don't think we can hold this mass illusion in our minds anymore that the internet is a global, free, open information network that can unite humanity and spread information and make food taste better and flowers smell better. None of that's ever going to happen. You know, realistically,
I mean, already, even before the FCC takes another step here, you're saying it's already game over?
Oh, it's not like it's game over. It's that game's been ending. It's been steadily eroding over the past 20 years. And we're now at a point where so many of our digital flows of data come through lockdown devices like iPhones and proprietary applications that run on those things, on those sorts of devices. So much of our use of information runs through proprietary interfaces like Facebook and Twitter, which don't necessarily have our interests in mind. We have to really recalibrate how we imagine these systems working in our mind, in our society, in our globe. At the very same moment, you have Brazil and the European Union, both in the last month, taking massive commitments and strides forward, both in privacy protection and network neutrality. So on one side, you have Brazil and the European Union saying, we like a highly competitive system of information flow that enlightens our citizens. And on the other side, you have Russia, Turkey, and India totally cracking down on internet usage. You have Vladimir Putin basically telling the Russian people just the other day that the internet was a CIA project, you know, and completely undermining faith in a global network for the people of Russia.
And the U.S. on that spectrum,
you have Russia. I'm sorry, in the middle of that, you have the United States. Somewhere in between Brazil and Russia sits the United States. And we are not having a full nationwide conversation about what sort of information ecosystem is necessary to make this democracy run.
Shiva Vaidyanathan, please stand by. We're going to hear from Kevin Warbach, who's a little more sympathetic to these new rules. Here was Tom Wheeler, the FCC chair himself, at a big cable industry trade show in Los Angeles just last month saying, I'm not going to gut the open internet, telling the cable industry, put away the party hats, you'll hear him say.
Those who oppose the idea of net neutrality might feel like a celebration is in order. Reports that we're gutting the open internet are incorrect. I'm here to say to you, wait a minute. Put away the party hats.
Put away the party hats, says Tom Wheeler, the FCC chair, former big lobbyist for the cable industry. Shiva Vaidyanathan, please stand by in Charlottesville, Virginia. With us right now from Villanova, Pennsylvania, Kevin Warbach, associate professor of legal studies and business ethics at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, served as counsel for new technology policy at the FCC during the Clinton administration. Kevin Warbach, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show, Tom.
How do you interpret this? I think firestorm is not too hot a word for it that has come in response to Chairman Wheeler's not yet fully articulated, but I guess basically understood push. Why so much pushback, Kevin?
Well, first of all, I think it's great that so many of these technology companies, Silicon Valley companies, investors and so forth, are taking such an interest in this issue and being so vocal. As Siva said, that industry has not really come to the table enough on these issues in Washington. There's been a debate about network neutrality at the FCC for the past decade.
Sure.
I'm on the board of an organization called Public Knowledge that has been one of the leading advocacy groups on this issue. And I've seen for years when they would go to Silicon Valley and say, we need your help on this, the response they would get from many of the companies was, well, we're with you in spirit, but we're afraid of the regulators. We don't want government involved in this issue. We like the free market, and so we're not going to actually put any skin in the game. So first of all, the fact that so many companies are being so public about this and having an influence, I think, is great.
Are they doing that because now the chips are down, the regulation's coming anyway, or maybe coming, and they think it's so horrible, the shape of it?
One thing to keep in mind here is there are no net neutrality rules today. The FCC, again, has been debating this for a long time. They proposed some rules in 2010. Those were struck down by a court earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is the approach that the FCC chairman is proposing to impose net neutrality rules good enough? And I think a lot of these companies are concerned, and they're finally realizing what the potential is of this.
You've written a piece saying the perfect is the enemy of the good. Don't ask for too much or you may end up in a worse situation. That seems to kind of parallel Tom Wheeler's argument here, Kevin.
Yeah, the issue here is Wheeler's proposal, as it has been reported, would ban pretty much all of the major practices that people traditionally have described as network neutrality. So it would prevent these broadband access providers from blocking traffic arbitrarily. It would prevent them from deliberately degrading the quality of the connection. It would prevent them from advantaging their own affiliates over other people's content. What it would do is have a different test for these paid prioritization deals, what people call the fast lane. It would have the FCC review them. It would have standards for how that would happen, but it's a lesser standard than the one in the previous FCC rules. And just to be clear, the issue here is not a fast lane and everyone is stuck on a dirt road. The issue here is we've got a highway and someone wants to build a carpool lane next to it. Or we've got the Postal Service and someone wants to allow you to pay for delivery for FedEx overnight. And the question is, does that inherently degrade the existing channel? Or will the companies use that as an opportunity to degrade the existing channel? And what Chairman Wheeler is saying in that quote that you just played is the FCC is going to regulate and ensure under his plan that they don't do that.
Siva, let me put that to you and with a little more from Tom Wheeler right here. Here he is again in L.A. last month saying, we are not going to have congested lanes here. We're not going to force everybody into some dirt road. Here's Tom Wheeler.
Prioritizing some traffic by forcing the rest of the traffic onto a congested lane won't be permitted under any proposed open internet rule. We will not allow some companies to force internet users into a slow lane so that others with special privileges have superior service.
And he's saying it very slowly, so you get the point, Siva, but you don't buy it. Why? I mean, Kevin says all they're doing is opening a carpool lane, a fast lane for some. They're not going to slow down others. What's the problem?
Yeah, well, so you can either use the traffic analogy. Opening up new lanes to highways never speeds up or even maintains speed in the other lanes. It just causes more congestion overall. That's one thing. Secondly, the post office analogy is really interesting, the one that Kevin brought up. Because, look, ever since the rise of FedEx or UPS overnight delivery, the post office has, in fact, degraded its service. It wasn't necessary. It didn't have to happen that way. But once you drive attention and business away from system number one into system number two, and you create that bifurcation, then you encourage a lot more investment in the faster prime system and a lot less investment in the slower one. That makes the fast one a lot more interesting and attractive, and the slower one a lot more pedestrian, almost literally pedestrian in the case of traffic. Now, that's what we have to worry about. We also have to remember that this chopping up of our information ecosystem into different systems with different lanes with different rules doesn't play into the public interest overall. The public interest overall is served by the most open and consistent set of rules so that entrepreneurs and the public can understand exactly what they're dealing with, what they're paying for, what they're getting, and what their government is demanding of the services that are serving us. That is the right way to go. The right way to go is the way with courage to reclassify all of these systems under the same set of rules that would involve and require non-discrimination and no blocking,
like
and
telephone
all of those
communications,
great things, right? So yes, those principles have worked very well, and they should work very well. Now, Kevin's right; we do not currently have network neutrality rules. The courts keep gutting them as the FCC brings them out, but that's because the FCC has been trying to sneak network neutrality into its current system of classification, which, as I said, is absurd. If they would just reclassify cable broadband along the lines of the way that they have governed telephones and before that DSL, although DSL has changed as well, then you would have a much healthier system overall. And we wouldn't worry about just keeping Comcast happy or just keeping Netflix flowing. Just the other day, Comcast started demanding extortion money from Level 3, which is one of the retransmitters of internet video.
Mm-hmm.
This has never happened before. But basically, Comcast is in such a strong political, economic, and technological position as the controller of the last mile to all of our homes that it can shake down companies like Level 3 and Netflix for extra money to do what they've been doing already. And this is a really dangerous situation, and it's outside of the purview of these FCC proposals.
And let me begin to turn to our callers, and they've been waiting patiently. Jim in Boston. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to reinforce this word extortion, because it's not as if there is some faster internet being ready to, you know, roll out. This is the same internet. It's just that some people will get delegated to, for example, I run a web design company in Boston here.
Okay.
And you know, we may end up kind of on the slow lane because we're not going to be paying, you know, to access the same web that we were accessing before.
Kevin Rohrbach says there's no dirt road option here. Don't worry about it.
Well, where is the faster internet?
It's also important to understand what we're talking about here. This is not about end-user access. You as an individual or a company, what you pay and what you get from your broadband access provider is not under these rules. The issue here has to do with the relationship between the broadband access provider and service providers on the other end of the network.
Are you comforted by that, Jim?
Not really. I mean, we are building websites for people on a server. That server then has a choice of paying for faster access to the internet, which they already have, or not. And then where will they be?
And you're afraid, are you worried about the innovation problem here, Jim, that newcomers will be, you know, eating dust?
Well, there are thousands of small companies that are relying on the internet as we know it. So where will they all be? I mean, there are startups, there are new ideas being fleshed out all the time. Do they have to then pay some kind of new rate, which I would call extortion, to get the same thing they were getting before?
And will they be funded in the first place if investors look at a new profile of internet content delivery and say, hey, it's a new day, it's a new game? Jim, thanks for your call. Kevin Rohrbach, I'll come to you right after a break here. Siva Vaidyanathan, please stand by. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the battle over net neutrality. It is white hot right now. FCC pushing for a new set of rules. Chair Tom Wheeler out front on that. He's got some dissent now within his ranks from fellow Democrats on the FCC. A week from today, there's supposed to be action. We'll see if that schedule holds up. Yesterday, nearly 150 internet companies, including big and small, but Amazon, Dropbox, eBay, Etsy, Facebook, Foursquare, Google, right on, Netflix, Reddit, Tumblr, Twitter, Yahoo, all saying, hey, hold up here. They're worried about a real threat to what the internet has been. But there are plenty of people pushing for this as well. Here's one talking last week with CNBC. Comcast chairman and CEO Brian Roberts said he welcomes forthcoming FCC rules on net neutrality.
Having clear rules, so long as they're in the spirit of the last set of rules, makes a lot of sense. It allows you to invest, allows your investors to know what the rules are. And I think it allows consumers to know that they're always going to go wherever they want. They're going to be able to do so in an open way, never have any blocking. And that's never happened.
Comcast chair says, bring it on. Siva Vaidyanathan is with us. He's from the University of Virginia's Department of Media Studies chair there. Kevin Werbach is with us from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Kevin, I want to come to you. Lots of comments online here, but here's one. Respond to this and then more that we've heard. But Jacob says, does anyone at all think it would be fair in any way for Ford Motor Company to pay a fee so that all drivers of Ford cars are exempt from speeding tickets? That's very similar to what we're talking about here, and it's crazy that anyone other than Comcast, Verizon, and other end-user ISPs would think it's fair. What do you say, Kevin?
I don't think it's an accurate analogy. Again, okay. The issue here is, I agree with everything that Siva is saying in terms of the need to have a conversation about the information infrastructure that we want, an ecosystem that we want. And I completely agree that in an ideal world, having this under the Title II rules for telephone companies makes sense. But even if we did that, we would still have to go case by case and look at each set of practices. So the question is, when there are proposed relationships, and it's not that there's just one fast lane and one slow lane. There are all kinds of things that happen between these companies all the time. So, for example, Netflix and Comcast recently reached an agreement about direct interconnection that had not only a price involved in it, but a whole bunch of traffic engineering about where things get handed off. There's relationships between these companies about where content is cached. There's all sorts of variables involved. And the question is, when we see a practice, is it analogous to what the caller is suggesting? Is it exclusive? Is it artificially favoring the broadband provider or its affiliates? Does it harm competition? And I completely agree that we need to have a cop on the beat that looks at those deals. We need to have a requirement that those deals be transparent, which right now they're not, and a decision made about whether they are legitimate. That's what the FCC is proposing. Again, the question is which set of tests that they use. And the challenge here is we've been under a cloud for years about whether the FCC has legal authority in this area. And I understand that people think they could just declare that it's reclassified. That would be challenged in court, and that would be challenged heavily by Congress. The court, for the first time a few months ago, said the FCC has legal authority under the theory they've set forth to regulate these practices. I think they should take that opportunity while they've got it.
I get the let's do it while you can. On the other hand, if you say you favor, I mean, the ideal world would be great. Maybe this is a chance. Maybe this is a time to fight for that. You know, people can make the you can't get the ideal world argument about a lot of things that have taken society forward. Maybe this is a time to draw a line. I want to hear from our listeners. I'll come to you, Siva, as well. Scott in Jamestown, New York. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I guess I'm sort of reiterating what the previous caller said, but we already pay for how fast we go. You know, if you have a DSL line, you pay for each stage you want to go up. If you want to go faster, you got to go jump up, pay more to go to cable or to fiber optic. Same for businesses. You want a T1 line, a T3 brought in. And what good does that do if you can run into a wall or, you know, a narrower road on the other end? If what I'm trying to access, be it Netflix or Hulu or just, you know, Bob's website over there, if they're not paying the same extortion money to the other company, you know, if Verizon and Comcast can't work it out, you know,
I mean, so you're paying at your end for more speed, but you're assuming everything will come down to you at the speed you pay for on a kind of an even field. I mean, Steve, on that front, to be fair to Tom Wheeler, he's been out in public and he said, look, we're going to be the cop on the beat, as Kevin says. And
yeah, but look,
we've got this. Let me just put this out there. He said, we're going to stay on top of what's commercially reasonable. And here are four things he said. Something that harms consumers, not commercially reasonable. We won't allow it. Something that harms competition, not commercially reasonable. Tom Wheeler says, we won't allow it. Providing exclusive, prioritized services to an affiliate, not reasonable. Won't allow it. And finally, something that curbs the free exercise of speech and civic engagement, not commercially reasonable. We won't allow it. That sounds like a lot of guarantees.
Yeah, that should give us real pause that Brian Roberts from Comcast is applauding these proposals as well, knowing that those promises are pretty empty. Comcast has flouted the rules on a number of occasions. Comcast has already been busted for violating network neutrality back when there was actually a set of rules. And in the case of it trying to extort money from Level 3 for retransmitting video, we see that Comcast is willing to shake down another company that is providing, and let's get this straight, a competing video service. Comcast is in the business of sending video on a pay-per-view basis mm-hmm. to your home.
Yep.
That is one of the core businesses of Comcast. And clearly, Netflix and the other services that rely on Level 3 to get their video to you clearly compete with them. So anything they're doing, and they're doing it to mess with those services and shake them down for extra money, should be immediately suspicious. You know, you're dealing with a situation. Look, Netflix signed a separate deal with Comcast a few weeks ago, as Kevin brought up. That was an offer that Netflix couldn't refuse. Let's be really clear about that. We should all be really concerned about the increasing political and cultural power of Comcast. Comcast is a behemoth, and it's getting bigger. It is playing a similar role to what Standard Oil played in the 1890s. It has way too much control over important content that comes into our lives, because it owns NBC, MSNBC, CNBC. It owns the transmission of the Olympics. It has a tremendous amount of control over all of those systems and the ways in which those get to us. Comcast also is about to buy Time Warner Cable, and that's going to make it even bigger, even more powerful. The reason Kevin pointed out appropriately that if the reclassification went through to actually solve this problem in a simple and understandable and durable way, it would be immediately challenged in court and in Congress, is that Comcast has so much power in Congress. And that is something we should all be standing up against and not capitulating to.
Let me go to Springfield, Illinois, Abe Lincoln territory, and Nate. Hi, Nate. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I just really want to echo the comment was just made that, you know, my concern, aside from choking innovation, is really propagating political views that these large corporations hold. I know Google is against this move, but once the new rules are made, of course, they're going to learn how to play by them. And they gave heavily to the Obama campaign. Some people have even accused them of skewing Google search results to further political views. So that's my concern. It sounds like you just touched on it, but I'd like to hear more of what the panel thinks of that.
We'll do it, Nate. Keep an open internet commercially and politically. Kevin, what about that fear? If the stakes are political openness itself, then maybe we shouldn't settle for less than trying for that ideal world you mentioned.
But the point is, the ideal world doesn't solve that problem. The ideal world says we are under a different set of rules, and under that set of rules, the FCC still has to decide what's legitimate, what's appropriate. The FCC still has to go in and do enforcement.
But wouldn't they be much more empowered if this was under Title II, same as phone companies?
No, they have a broader scope of authority. Again, until the court earlier this year accepted the FCC's legal theory, that was a big question. Now the court has given them a pathway. Everything Siva is saying about the danger of too much power in these broadband providers, concerns about these arrangements with companies like Netflix,
mm-hmm.
I agree, that's a worry. All of that stuff that he's talking about is outside of net neutrality. If you reclassified under Title II, we'd still have all those issues. The relationships with the video providers are outside of these rules. I think that they are things the FCC should oversee.
But aren't they part of the same ecosystem? But if these companies don't have to be as afraid of new competition coming from innovators that could bump them out of their high chairs, and we've seen lots of big companies brought down by internet innovators, if they're not afraid of that because they've got different speeds and therefore more staying power, doesn't that also enhance their political power? Because the politicians can't imagine, well, someday they'll go away. They'll be there forever.
So what will change the dynamic is, first of all, a political fight. And that's why I said at the beginning, I think it's fantastic that so many people are coming out and weighing in on this, and it's fantastic that so many companies are weighing in on it. I hope that they will stay involved and engaged and fight the fight in Washington. If they don't, then there's only one side that's pushing on this issue. The other way that things will change is if we have real competition for broadband. And the way to get that is to do things like preempt the laws in about 20 states that prohibit municipalities from competing with fiber against the incumbents. Another way to do that is make more wireless spectrum available so that wireless, and especially unlicensed wireless, can become a viable competitive alternative. Those are all things the FCC is trying to do, and I'm really worried that if we get in this fight years and years more of debating about the legal authority, debating about the politics and so forth, that the FCC is not even going to be able to do those things.
That's exactly right.
That ultimately will overcome the imbalance that's there in the market today.
Siva, so, enemy of the good, then. Kevin supporting this direction,
look,
but not you. Why?
I don't think anybody's arguing for the perfect, but I think Kevin and I agree very much that taking a more comprehensive view of our information ecosystem and the policies is exactly what we need to do. So what he just laid out should be the communication policy agenda for the next decade. And we should be pushing for more municipal broadband experiments. We should be pushing for more publicly financed rural broadband. Believe me, I live in a pretty rural area, and broadband access around here is a disaster. I happen to live in one city where Comcast is the only choice. So, I'm sure those of you in most of the country agree with that problem. So that fact alone, the fact that we don't have decent competition, that we don't have decent options, the fact that we could have much faster broadband, we could have broadband comparable to South Korea or Japan or Western Europe.
And we have
We're
a fraction of their
that.
Speed and much more expensive here.
The reason we don't is that Washington is stuck paying homage to these very powerful companies, these very powerful incumbents. They call the shots. We don't. And we really need to change the conversation politically, first and foremost, so that the public interest governs the decision-making. The problem with the current proposal is it digs deeper into these bifurcations, trifurcations, quadfurcations of policy, and does not take a comprehensive look at what we need as citizens and what we need as commercial actors to get our jobs done over the next decade.
Let's go to Elizabeth, Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about the fact that this small group of people are now in charge of all of the rules. I recently read the book 1984. When you have a small group of people who are in charge of the information that's disseminated, what about small websites? CureYourOwnCancer.org, where you can cure cancer with a medication. People don't know that. What kind of world are we looking at if those websites are not able to get on because they can't afford it? Their voice is not going to be heard. Our individual voices as citizens of this country are not going to be heard.
Yeah, Elizabeth, we've got it. That sort of democratizing anticipation of what the web would be. But Siva, I appreciate your call, Elizabeth. Siva, Kevin says, if you take a stand here, you may end up in worse shape. If you bog this down for years here, you may end up in less open, free circumstances on the web.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen regardless of what sort of stand we take now if we lose the larger political battle, if we lose the focus on the larger question of having an open and accessible information ecosystem that is affordable to the vast majority of Americans. And believe me, we're nowhere close to having that, nor have we ever been. So that's really the question. And Kevin and I are completely on board together on that larger issue. And I'm very sympathetic to the idea that quibbling over this current rule proposal is not really going to get us where we need to go.
Well, then what? Talk about the proper way to get to the ideals that you both say you support. Yeah. You've got 150 companies standing up and saying, don't do this. You've got FCC commissioners saying, let's think twice about this. If this isn't the place, what's the way?
Yeah, I think Kevin and I are both on the same page on this. We need to make sure we energize the organizations that are standing up for the public interest, organizations like Public Citizen.
But are you saying go on down this path with Tom Wheeler or resist it then?
Oh, no. I'm certain we need to resist this. I'm sympathetic to the other FCC commissioners who are asking for a delay in this so we get richer, fuller public discussion. I think this is a clear capitulation. Interests of Comcast. I think we need to stop it and have them look from the top to the bottom about how they want to proceed. I think we need to call them out about this. Now, that doesn't mean that battle's going to succeed. I'm never confident about my side's ability, my arguments to carry the day in Washington, D.C. I'm way too old to believe that. But no, I think that we really need to push this out there because this is an ideal opportunity to make the case for a much better, more democratic, more comprehensive set of policies coming out of Washington. Mm. And frankly, we have to call the president himself to account because the president himself made his commitment to network neutrality and to the open internet a clear part of his campaign in 2008.
Hey, Kevin, we've just got 20 seconds here. Kevin, fight this, Kevin, or take this medicine. It's the best we've got.
I think this is the best opportunity we've got right now, but we can't lose sight of the bigger picture. And this is really important, and people need to continue to weigh in. What we're talking about is an FCC proposal. That's the starting gun on the discussion. It's not the end of it.
We are trying to open up all the doors and windows here to let everybody see what's going on, and you've been very helpful, the two of you, in helping us do that. Kevin Werbach at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Kevin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Siva Vaidyanathan at University of Virginia, chair of the Department of Media Studies there. Siva, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. As always, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.